into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
All right, you're very welcome along to OTB Sports' brand new show, The Ball Game, where we discuss the business of sport, and needless to say, giving everything that's gone on around the globe at the minute. Episode one is dedicated to the challenges and opportunity during a pandemic that I'm sure is a theme we're going to come back to over the course of the series. And delighted to say that no three better people to discuss the topic than Jill Downey, who's MD of Core Sponsorship. We've Matt Mooney, Head of Digital and Innovation at AIB, and Noel Quinn, Senior Marketing and Media Rights Manager at the GAA and the man behind GAA Go. And I know, Noel, you're keen, obviously, to discuss your Donegal roots as well, given the weekend that was in it.
Yeah, well, glad you you opened through the ball in that one, Adrian. But yeah, delighted with the win at the weekend. Looking forward to 2 weeks' time to see how they progress against Ciara Magini's Armagh. But yeah, it was a great win, and I certainly enjoyed sitting down watching some live championship action after the hiatus.
We'll come back and maybe discuss some of the how you've plotted your way through the business side of things over the last 6 or 7 months or beyond. But seeing the games go off over the weekend, the slight complication obviously with Sligo notwithstanding this week, is it going to be a case, do you think, for the GAA and for Croke Park over the next 6 or 7 weeks that there will be an ebb and flow about it, or how do you take stock at this juncture having a couple of weekends behind you?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's ebb and flow in everyday life at the moment. And sport in the GAA is no different to that. The Sligo news is really disappointing for the players and the management, particularly given the efforts they've no doubt put in over the last number of months. And it's a shame that they've had to concede that match. But on a positive note, great that we are back. We're 2 weeks into championship. And I know we're going to have a discussion around, you know, some of the things that have changed and some of the challenges we've faced. But I would say it is great to have those challenges and to be sitting down watching matches again. I'm paraphrasing when I say fear lies in the unknown. But when we paused games on March 12th, we really didn't know what 2020 held for us, for the GAA. And I think some people did steal a march. They continued on a little more in the Southern Hemisphere. They got some extra rounds of games away in the AFL and the A-League. But we stood everything down, and we were looking like we were going to be staring down the barrel of continuous reruns and classic matches for 2020, which worked really well at a time, but there was nothing quite like live sport. So it was fantastic that we were able to address the challenges when we got the green light from the government, from NPHET, from HSE, which is the guidelines to take a steer from. But it wasn't without, yeah, it wasn't without probably some difficult decisions to make in recent weeks from a broadcast and marketing perspective.
There was a great photo that popped up on my social media timeline over the weekend that got me thinking about something that I wanted to ask you about. It was from Stephen McCarthy, a sports file, and it was fittingly with Matt on the line and AIB hoarding upside down. It was the most 2020 photograph you've seen, where the steward is obviously trying to put all the infrastructure in place around a championship game. It might have been clones, in fact. Is it just a case that everything was kind of ready to go from several months ago and all that you can unpause, or are there a lot of sleepless nights in the lead-in over the last 6 or 7 weeks?
From a marketing perspective, we certainly pressed pause. We can chat a little bit about messaging maybe later on in the chat, but specific to broadcast, we did press pause, and because of the major backlog, we are definitely in unprecedented times here, unprecedented in terms of demand for access to broadcast, for example. Given that crowds are not allowed to attend, broadcast is the only show in town. So that leads into volume issues. To give an example of that, typically there's around 180, 190 games on television every year, Gaelic games. So you have 52 weeks of the year to run those off and schedule them. We've essentially looked to slot in 100 games within a 10-week period or 20 weekend days. So essentially half the yearly load within a fifth of the available calendar. So that's been challenging. Trying to get as much live television on screens as possible. Secondary to that, trying to get as much online only broadcasts and trying to make sure they don't clash, if at all possible, to allow you to watch a match at 1 o'clock, another match at 3 o'clock or 5 o'clock, rather than having a couple on at the same time. So there's different considerations. We're not the NBA. We cannot put players into hotels or put them in a bubble in Disney World. They're amateurs. So that comes with its own challenges. The CCCC have done their best to fixture according to a winter championship. Will that pitch stand up to scrutiny over a couple of days, taking different teams? What are the facilities like in that venue for social distancing purposes? Is there floodlights? Is there not? Is the floodlights good enough for broadcast? Is there not? Are they not? The finishing the day protocol is a new consideration for us. Extra time and penalties, if darkness comes. Is there floodlights there? So lots of different pieces to feed into that. Existing broadcaster contractual obligations, obviously, as well, need to be considered. And some of the broadcasters already have other sporting commitments. So you're trying to get a massive jigsaw piece together. So it is certainly different. We have 11 triple headers in the next couple of weeks. We have one day where we have 4 live games, and we have another day where we actually have 5 live games. So it's been a strong start in the first 2 weeks in terms of engagement online and because of TV figures. So here's hoping that continues.
Yeah, and I know that it's a great conundrum for the country to have, obviously, in terms of even beyond GAA from all those sports point of view. Matt, can we go back to March when all this was starting to unfold and the uncertainty even more so than there is now that arose at that time? And what, I suppose, your meetings were like at that stage in terms of the activity that you had in place and the activity that you had planned and the messaging that you were looking at and how you were going to go about managing that at that point?
Yeah, well, I guess, like, look, the most important thing is, while we're talking about sponsorship, like, we've such a strong partnership with the GAA and a very close relationship with them. So what happened right at that moment is, like everybody else, everything kind of came out of the blue with everyone. It's complete uncertainty for everything in our business. So for us, in terms of our work with GAA, it was just to sit back and see, like, what was going to be the most appropriate way to come out. And actually for us, it was to, how can we double down? Because we knew that we needed to be a sponsor that was being present and actually demonstrating to our fans, our customers in the GAA, that, like, it's more than just the sport on the field that's important to be in the GAA. And that's actually for us. So if you think about a sponsorship, sponsorships for us, that gives us access to reach, and the GAA is an amazing platform for that. But when you take away the reach, it's why you partner up with a sponsor and the values that you share and the reasons why you do it. And for us, it's the community efforts and the work that's done and that the GAA does in the community that became incredibly important to us, which is why actually very quickly our sights moved to, well, what is that community answer? And, you know, how can we best face out to the community? And really, the community was already doing the work that was necessary. We just kind of needed to bring it to light. So a lot of the work that we did with the toughest summer would have come out of that. So it was just about trying to understand, while the game's not being played on the field, the community of GAA was still alive and kicking, and the stories that were happening there were an amazing opportunity to really kind of show kind of how beautiful the sport is and the people that are behind it. I mean, I'm a Dublin season ticket holder. It's rare I have any sympathy for a Mayo GAA fan, but David Brady and everything that he's done and the story we got to tell of what he was doing in lockdown was incredible. Like, and I guess as a brand, that's our responsibility, like, is to tell stories around the sport that we all love, to try and elevate the sport beyond just players on a pitch, because other sports can do that, but that they're the things that GAA can do that I don't think any other sport in this country could actually match.
It's an interesting point, Jill, that Matt brings up there in relation to the community-led aspect almost of the messaging in some regards and how brands responded to that. What was your experience like over those early few weeks and months in terms of getting the message right, getting the regular message out there in such irregular times almost?
I think all brands had to be careful of the tone they were using, for sure. I mean, I think that's fair of all communications, though, not just related to sponsorship, obviously. And so it was a combination of maybe taking a little bit of time to listen and to understand what was going on, but also working at pace, obviously, because for everybody, this was all new. But most of the brands we worked with, they were very patient, I think, at the beginning with the rights holders they were working with. And it was vice versa. It was very much, you know, as Matt says it's a partnership between them. I think there was a lot of patience to begin with. I think people are still counting the cost, though, and where it all actually ends up for sponsorship will be, you know, will remain to be seen in the next while. I actually think this year, you know, most of the sponsorship commitments from Rights Holders will be made good in one way, shape or form. And, you know, as Noel said, with increasing number of games and places you can access coverage now, that will all help, you know, in order for sponsors to get that value and for Rights Holders to recoup that value for sponsors that was lost during the period. But, you know, I think if you go back to the beginning, I suppose, like Matt says, there was just there was an awful lot of good came out, and sponsors kind of quickly turned to how could we add to this good? What's the purpose, purpose-driven kind of thinking behind what we're doing? I mean, we think Super Value and Centre did an incredibly good job as well, you know, again, with the GA partnership to kind of come together and see how they could deliver groceries to the vulnerable and the cocooning. And yeah, it just shows the power. I mean, look, the GA is a proxy for Ireland, really, in many ways. It's not just a sporting body. And I mean, that's why it gets a disproportionate share of coverage, and both positive and negative, because everybody looks to it as an institution in Ireland. But, you know, I think overall, you know, I would say that sponsors have been very smart with what they've done, and they have they've all had to pivot online and to social media and things like that too, to engage with the fans and to really kind of listen to what they're looking for. But it's a challenge for sure. But it's an exciting challenge too. I mean, it's brought across and out so much innovation now. I mean, I think that's a trend that will just continue, and there's no going back from where we are, I guess, at this stage.
Yeah, it does feel like across business, whether it's sponsorship or rights in terms of this conversation or the wider industry, that people are far more open. Noel, you might take on that point in relation to all aspects of working life now, that people are open to doing things differently. Was that your experience in terms of those? You mentioned the rights and sponsorship aspect of it across the last 6-7 months.
Yeah, I think absolutely is the case. Innovation was key. I think a lot of budgets were revised, reviewed, frozen, restarted, etc. And Joe mentioned the Super Value Centre Club Together initiative there. That was a good example of, I'm going to say that cliche business word at the moment, they pivoted very quickly, but it was for the greater good. I mean, delivering groceries via the local GA club network to an elderly person or somebody who's cocooning or shielding was just a really nice thing to do. It was made possible because of the Musgrave network. And that extended beyond, I think, which was really pertinent, it extended beyond just a GA club member. Jill also touched on it there. The GA are on the front page as much as they're on the back page some days. So we take the good and the bad together. Some would argue about the GAA's role and, you know, playing games presently. And I think that cohort of people probably were also the cohort who benefited from the likes of the Club Together initiative earlier in the year. So there was lots of good stuff. I think when we did change creative output and messaging, we'd be mindful that it was essential messaging only. There was no superfluous spend. That goes without saying for all, I think, marketing teams. No imagery that would jar with, you know, government guidelines, particularly given the environment. Speaking on behalf of the GA, we were really fortunate probably that we had rolled out our new brand positioning last year, Where We All Belong. And I think that just happened to fit really well with this year, even though people were staying away from each other, that sense of belonging and community ethos probably fed into that great groundswell in March and April when people were rallying around each other around the country. So we were fortunate that we had that campaign that wasn't paused, that continued. We had a lot of good contra arrangements with our existing media partners that allowed us to continue that. It fell nicely into the return of club action as well. So Where We All Belong, Tattoo Nilagon sat nicely with that. But in terms of championship creative, league creative, that was obviously all pulled. Our call to action is typically, you know, to attend. We're a participation and attendance organization. Our main call to action was pulled, and you know, I think you guys would have seen in recent weeks that the call out now is essentially where you can watch games, GA.ie/fixtures, as a means to know whether it's an RT or Sky or GA Go. There is HSE call to actions on our creative now, which we never would have envisaged this time last year. And there's also, you know, a social hashtag best seat nice. So our messaging has changed completely from where it was. And I have no doubt it will be changed for the foreseeable as well.
Yeah. And I mean, Matt, maybe no better time to be head of innovation at a company like AIB, maybe at the minute, given everything that's going on. But did it mean that there was a lot of binning of material and activity that you had planned and was kind of starting from scratch there again and, you know, taking on some of those points there?
Yeah, well, I think luckily, like, we've always put a huge emphasis on the value of online conversation and online communities. And like, we have the largest, outside of the GA themselves, we've the largest set of social channels for GA fans at large. And for us, that's always been an emphasis for us, is building those communities. So, you know, there's a whole team that are constantly looking at how we engage better online, how we create more conversation, because I guess it's the GA's job to kind of create conversation around the actual game. It's, again, like I say, about the storytelling. It's our opportunity to try and see what's the interesting point that we can have around it. So whether it's, you know, we've the largest collection of GIFs on Instagram that you can, sticker GIFs you can put onto your Instagram stories as you're sharing them, that we've spent a lot of time trying to create a lot of humor there. I always get a kick out of it when I see friends of mine sharing a checkered flag that says Hill 16 is Dublin only, because I know my team have created that. And we also have some that are branded, and we've done a lot of stuff for other counties, and we tried to kind of make a way for fans to have their own point to say and their own conversation. And then, like I said, like, look, at the moment we're following through with the same brand creative, which is the community. The more it's challenged, the more it stands up to the challenge. And I think the sport itself, now it's great to see live games back again, and I think the more that we can see the live games back, the more we can see that the competition is still alive and kicking there. And it's still, I think the biggest insight that I've learned in COVID is you can never replace fans in the stadium, and you never will be able to. We can obviously do every effort to try and make the experience more engaging, make it more exciting, and bring a little bit more attention to the sport and to the games. But ultimately, like, in the future, we are all fighting the same battle, which is to get fans back in the stadiums and to get some normality back into our lives. And I think that's been really interesting for me, because as a brand, the access you have to fans becomes narrower now, because there's a whole set of fans now that aren't partaking in sport that previously would have, because there is the occasional fan in the group of friends who goes along to the pub but isn't really a supporter. There's the kind of the casual supporter who'll watch because it's a big occasion. Like, I definitely think that at the weekend, the final day of the Six Nations, like, I actually tweeted something. I said it was the first time I'd actually felt sport in a while. It was the first time it really felt somewhat normal again. Like, there was an atmosphere and an energy around getting behind the Irish rugby team that we hadn't seen for a while. And we can see that starting to come back in with the Intercounty Championship. And I guess that's probably the main focus for us now, is to try to be a brand that's supporting getting that energy back in. Because, like you said, it could be another 12 months, you know, where we're kind of in and out of various different situations. So for us as a sponsor, like, our job has always been to make sure that we elevate the game and the sport and the organization. And that's all we can try and do, is try and support the GAA as best we can, give fans the access to the sport they haven't had before. And yeah, we're going to have to continue to pivot. We'll continue to innovate. We'll continue to change what we have to do. Same as Noel said, there's constant challenges. But I think at least now we have a set of levels, so we can begin to plan for, you know, what activity we can have live during different situations. And to be honest, we have to be as flexible as possible and respond to the situation as opportunities present themselves. And like I said at the start, like, having a close sponsorship, or a partnership with GAA is what gives us that.
Yeah, I do think the club championships played into that as well. Noel, the time that they came along, particularly, I think that people were, you guys were obviously providing, and clubs were providing a service to stream games, and they came in all sorts of shapes and sizes and quality. And I know that, I presume that was a challenge, first of all, on the one side. And then on the other side of that, it was probably a way for people in some regards to reconnect with, I know I found that I had reconnected with my own club in a way that I actually hadn't had the opportunity to do almost in the last 20 years. And you were happy to go and pay your 5 or 10 euro and actually reconnect with your club in a way that just hadn't been the case for the last number of years.
Yeah, and Friday, July 17th, I'll never forget that date, because it's the St. Martin's against Ullard de Balla in Wexford seemed like the epicenter of club championship, because TG Carr picked up their first live game in 4 months. So it was great to get club going again. There was close to 50 games televised in the subsequent 11 or 12 weeks across TG Carr and RTE, which was great. Counties did unleash their streaming desires. There was 31 of 32 counties streaming and behind a paywall, I might add. And the other county had put together a really innovative media outlet partnership, which allowed free access in return for advertising. So interesting for county boards to dip their toe in that to a greater extent. It was also a chance for us probably to step our own way through return to training, return to play protocol at local level first, before obviously it ramped up then to inter-county stage. The quirk in this probably is it also makes a strong argument for a split GAA season, which people will talk more and more about based on proposals that are out there at the minute. But club, I think it was only right and proper, should have been the first point of return, and it was. And I think there was some great jubilations and celebrations around the country. And it was something that lifted people, it gave them a beacon of hope, I think. Albeit League of Ireland Soccer and horse racing had been back before. But en masse, I suppose there's 1,600-1,700 GAA clubs around the country. Everybody felt they could participate again.
Yeah, I'm interested in people's opinion about the because I know that, speaking from my own experience, and I think it was pretty much replicated around, Jill, and feel free to take this on or anybody can jump in, but the quality, I think people's acceptance of a lack of quality, I know that some of the games I watched at Loam versus Gary Castle, and there was a blind spot in the production where they would miss out on some of the action down the bottom left-hand corner, but I felt myself in a very different space than I would have been maybe 6 months earlier, where I was fully accepting that this was something that was been piped into my living room, and I was damn happy to get it. And I suppose, Jill, maybe fans' acceptances of that just being the reality, and even in terms of brands' associations with those types of productions now, maybe there's a bigger opportunity there than would have existed before.
Yeah, well, with fans starved of action for so long, of course, you're going to just be delighted to see some bit of competitive sport on TV or on any platform you're watching. I think the challenge there now is that as we get more and more used to being able to watch what we want rather than what is served to us by a broadcaster or a digital platform, how will we come back from that if things return to normal? So that's what I think will, I think in some ways sporting bodies have maybe accepted the status quo. I mean, I wouldn't include the GAA here, well, mainly because Noel's on the line anyways. No, but they've been at the forefront with things like GAA Go. But I think some sporting bodies, and I'd include, the bigger ones in the UK as well, they've been a little bit guilty of accepting the status quo. I think they always thought the fans would be in the stadium. They took that a bit for granted. You can see now that the experience is very different for the fan. Or without the fan. I mean, even last night, you saw Jota score a goal and not celebrate. And that was just purely because there was nothing to sort of, really make it a big deal for him. And you could tell in that very moment, he was really missing the fan. So I think everybody's recognised the importance of the fan. If they didn't realise it before, they now know it's so important, so integral to the overall experience. So I think they'll start to look at, well, what's the fan experience when they return. I think we'll see a step up in sporting bodies looking to add to the fan experience, and that's where brands can really step in, because brands can help facilitate those things and improve them. And I think there's going to be a big shift into tools and technologies as well that will help that fan experience. And then on the other side, for brands and for the rights holders themselves, they're going to need to invest more in the tools that help them understand these audience fans better, what they're actually doing when they're in the stadium, when they're watching on TV, when they're watching on other platforms. And I think up to now, again, sporting bodies have maybe not invested enough in some of those tools. Right now, if you can imagine all of the sport on next weekend, from the Masters to the GAA to the football, to the England friendlies, etc., we're going to all have to up our game in understanding how those audiences are segmenting between what they're watching, how they're traveling between each of the different things, on what platforms, by how many, how that's all changing, and understanding then how sponsors are deriving value from those situations. And that means investing in better tools and systems, and better than there's mediocre measurement of this stuff at the moment across the board. And I think that will also have to change. And then even things like ticketing experiences will, you know, you'd hope to see sporting bodies change and innovate how fans buy tickets in the future. You know, from sitting in the same seat every time and not being able to buy tickets with your friends, you know, that sort of enhancing that fan experience is going to become a greater and bigger part of how all the sporting bodies react to this. And then I suppose there's the question of the fan experience while they're not in the stadium. So how do we add value to that experience when they're watching at home? And how can we tap into the, you know, the passion that Matt still mentioned about being behind the Irish team, the Irish rugby team, for example? How do we tap into that and how do brands do that? That's really the key is to, it's to keep adding things to that fan experience while they're at home. And again, I think it's a really exciting challenge, you know, for all of us in the industry to see where this can go. You see, like, you know, some examples of things that I've seen that I think were quite nice is Three unveiled their new sponsorship of the Chelsea football jersey, and they did that with an augmented reality platform through WhatsApp, so you could try on the jersey and see it on you, and then you could go straight to ordering from there. So there's just nice things like that, that, you know, that's a really unusual situation, a brand new sponsor on a massive jersey deal, you know, globally recognized deal in Chelsea football, and they had to decide how do they launch their new jersey in the pandemic. It's not happened before, you know, so I think they did it in a really, really smart way. So I just think the opportunities are endless now, but all roads lead to digital and data, from our perspective anyway. That's the only way we can really understand this, understand where the opportunities are, understand what the fans are doing, where they're doing it, by how many, and in to what degree. And I think it can only mean better insights for brands, and when they have better insights and better data, they can make better decisions on how they activate, and then that will also add to the fan experience. So I think it's a fascinating time.
Actually, I was just going to add to that, I think the one big win we're going to see after throughout all of this, I think the athlete is going to win, because I think we're going to head into an even more important era of the athlete brand, because I think that now more than ever do sporting organizations need the fans to really, really fully associate and identify with the athletes, because those moments when they score, those moments when they do something phenomenal now, they actually need their teams to perform and feel connected to the fan base. So it's going to have to work in both ways. So I think there's going to be an interesting dialogue now with a lot of sporting organizations where they're going to be a lot more open to allowing their players and their athletes access with brands support, because it actually might become a part of their performance, is making sure that they still feel connected to the fan base, make sure that they still feel connected to the people who really count when it comes to sport. So I think that might be very interesting to see brands sort of capitalizing on how they use athletes in the future. And you might see some of the rules start to change in terms of how many you need to use and what, how you can use them. And I think the athletes themselves are going to feel a lot more empowered to actually really kind of lead out here in terms of being those sort of the faces of the sporting brand.
Yeah. It's interesting and how that plays out, obviously, in a GAA context as well. And I wonder now, from your own point of view, because I know there was certainly, you were nodding away there in relation to some of the points that you're making about where that side goes, and feel free to pick up any of that. I did wonder sort of the investment in sort of time and resources now and ideas and innovation around where we're at. And, you know, we don't know where we're going to be in 12 months' time. We all suspect it's going to be some degree of where we're at the minute, but there may come a cliff edge, obviously, in that, where things largely go back to the way they were, and perhaps some of the good work maybe that people are involved in at the minute might go to waste. So that balance of investment in it now to make it pay off over the next 12 months, and then the pieces that you can take to work in the long term.
Yeah, the trick is to retain, obviously, the good new things we found out, and revert back to the previous stuff that we all liked. It depends how quickly people forget about their own lower expectations, as to your point about watching Gary Castle at Lone. You know, the local cameraman who's slinging a camera around the place, it's good enough because you get to sit in your couch in Dublin and watch it. So how quickly will people go back to saying, well, I want my 25 camera All-Ireland final set up courtesy of Sky or RTE, or am I still okay to watch that single camera game from Waterford against Sligo Rovers yesterday evening?
Or how long will they pay for it? No, there's the other thing, because obviously the pay-per-view conversation was in full swing in the UK over the last few weeks as well.
Absolutely, and it's not going away either. So it depends what people focus on as being priorities for next year, either if we're still in a relative lockdown or beyond. Matt mentioned there about athletes. Like, I do think athlete-generated content, short-form content will continue to grow. You know, the AAB Toughest Summer documentary shot by Ross Whittaker really beautifully, and Borgash Energy have a great Gogglebox type GA box series. So there's going to be a lot more of non-match content, I think, as a means to stem any potential. If there was another pandemic or if there was another major halt in live sport, I do think people will plan more appropriately for such an instance, so they haven't got this gap in terms of what they do to activate. For the time being, I think people are lowering their expectations in terms of what they can come to expect. I've certainly experienced that from even some of the GAA Go stuff we've done in recent weeks for the Alliance Leagues. We streamed 23 Alliance League games. We were to do a dozen championship games. We'll now do 11, obviously, because Sligo Galway was one this coming weekend. And people are prepared to pay, Adrian. People are prepared to sit and, be accustomed to the fact that they might necessarily have the replay. They mightn't have the co-com on that particular match. Just on the point about the pay-per-view across the water, that's an interesting one. I think a price drop seems imminent. The Premier League charging $14.95 for games. I think there will be a price drop because of public pressure and another lockdown. You know, they're averaging, I think, 39,000-40,000 views per match. By 15 quid is not bad business, but in terms of Premier League's global scale, it's not good enough. The leagues have boycotted, some monies have been repurposed towards charities rather than giving it to Premier League or to some of the broadcasters. So it's interesting, but similar to what the position we were in 6 years ago when we introduced Sky, some people are calling foul of this pay-per-view model in England, but a lot of the games were not going to be televised anyway, so they're actually additional games. Sometimes people overlook that. That was the case in 2014 with some of the GAA games that were put behind a subscription service in the form of Sky. But it's not going away anywhere. I think it's a sign of the times that county boards locally are now streaming behind the paywall. These skinny bundles, you know, $7.99 for Netflix, $4.99 for Spotify, Amazon Prime, Hulu. Streaming wars, I think it'll continue probably to be a race to the bottom in terms of the price paid, which can only be good for the consumer. You can get 3 months of Sky Sports for £6. Which is great for the consumer now, but it's a question of whether people will continue to go PPG. Will they have a season pass? Will they have a number of season passes? Maybe an all-encompassing mega aggregator might come down the line and say, we'll take all sports content and be the Netflix of sport. But the paywall issue is, it's there to stay. I think people are prepared to pay for good quality content, whether it's New York Times or, you know, Sunday Business Post, even away from sports. People are prepared to pay for better content now.
Yeah, it could be one for GAA Go down the track. And the quality of the productions will get better as well, is the thing as that goes on. A challenge for brands, obviously, Jill, to be in that space where audiences are far reduced.
Well, I suppose they're fragmenting more than anything else. And the problem with not having the right tools and systems available to measure those audiences in an aggregate way is that there's probably more, in some cases, more viewership, and we're not able to count it or capture it. And that will be the concern, because the way values are attributed to sponsorship deals are still based on sort of old school metrics, like equivalent media values. And that can't be a good thing. So we'll have to see innovation there as well. But, you know, we'll be able to, I mean, there are basic metrics to count streams and, you know, count measurement in TVs is pretty solid overall, but it's how to add them all up together. That's the key challenge here for us anyway, when we obviously look at metrics and measurement in depth. But it's, you know, it's hard to tell what the duplication is there, what's the migration of the audience from one program to the next, and from one platform to the next. So that's the challenge there. And I think that's why better tools and systems need to be invested in, you know, on all sides to really improve how we measure and capture those audiences. But also it'll be really important for the sporting organizations to understand how the sport is being consumed through these platforms. So, you know, for me, some things like streams can be misleading because, is it, you know, how long are you on the stream? Have you watched the full amount? You know, it doesn't matter if you've watched the full amount, if you've been exposed to enough sponsor branding during it, is that okay? What's the content around it, as you mentioned? I mean, like it will become more and more the role of the sponsor, of course, to extend that content and extend the stories out and do it in a way that fans want and fans want to engage in. But that will all factor into competitive nature in sponsorship too. So just how much content can any one person consume at any one time, even if they are sports nuts like us? You know, there's still only a certain amount of that sort of messaging that they can actually take in. So it's that's why the tools and systems are going to be really, really important for me. And I think we've been a long time talking about poor measurement and sponsorship, and I really do think that day has to come now.
Yeah, Matt, you might take that on from an AIB perspective, even that battle that everybody was so delighted about last weekend, where we were third and fourth screening the amount of sport that was on. But brands' appetite to be involved then in any one of those sports, is that just something that brands will have to make an accommodation for now going forward? Like Jill says, you'll have to, and AIB are very good at it already, but that sort of innovation beyond the live aspect of it, that yes, that will remain a part, but actually there's so much more to engage with to make your sponsorship worthwhile.
Yeah, well, like to Jill's point exactly there, like the measurement that's applied is so old school. Like, you know, gone are the days where your name on a jersey is enough to make you, you know, apparent to somebody that's watching sport. I think we're into a scenario now where you actually need to connect with a fan, that your sponsorship needs to actually mean something to them, and why you're a sponsor there. That's why I talked at the very start, like the values that the GAA has and the values that AIB has are very shared. And that's why for us, that's what we try and figure out beyond our name, beyond the hoardings, beyond, you know, our logo appearing. What are we doing that gives us a responsibility to the sport, and also gives us, I guess, an authenticity that means that, like, we are there to do something that we feel is actually going to make the sport better. And I do really mean that. I think that's an important one for us, as we talk about a lot when we're talking about ideas, is will it leave the sport in a better way? So, like, will it make somebody who previously didn't like GAA love it? Will it make somebody who previously, you know, didn't watch as much GAA become obsessed with it? Like, how are we positioning our national sport in a way that's never been done before? And it's why down the years you've seen us pit GAA athletes against international superstars in other sports, because we believe it belongs there. And I think the toughest summer for us was the next kind of evolution of that, which was demonstrating that the GAA community and the things that it does as a community are pretty special. And it's very hard to find that in other sports, particularly outside of Ireland. I don't think you can find the same level of community spirit that you can see happen during lockdown. You can see it in other parts of the world, but I think for it to be found in one sport in one country is pretty special. So for us as a brand, that's the big opportunity, is to help tell stories in a better way so that people appreciate that our role in GAA is more than just that of a logo.
Yeah, I think Harry Redknapp at Castlehaven is probably a testament to a lot of what you've just said there as well. As we wrap then, just everybody's sense almost, kind of final comments direction, but everybody's sense of the vital signs now for sports sponsorship and sports rights and where the market is at in relation to the overall topic that we've sat down to discuss today, the challenges and opportunity. So whoever wants to pick that up in terms of closing comments of where we're at, are we alive and well and the opportunity is bright, or where are we at generally?
I'm sure Jill is probably best placed. I've no doubt Core have projections on this, but for my tuppence worth on this, I mean, next year is going to be a huge year because of international events. You've talked about 2020, the Euros, the Ryder Cup in Wisconsin. Hopefully Pádraig Harrington can steer the Europeans to a win there. So Jill might have contrary data to this. I know PwC recently are projecting a 3.2 5% growth in the next 3 to 5 years, which is down from their original estimations. I think a large part of this will depend on how venues repurpose. Copark was obviously used for a COVID testing center during the summer. It's currently being used as a campus for the Royal College of Surgeons, and there is going to be used as a court service in the new year. So it depends how brands, associations, rights holders change their model if they have to. I suspect that if there's no crowds, broadcast will continue to spike broadcast interest, OTT, over-the-top content, and the non-match day stuff like, you know, the Amazon Prime All or Nothing, that kind of stuff will continue. Esports, Twitch platforms will continue to grow. I'm curious to hear what Jill has to say. How positive is she going to be on 2021 here?
I think we're, you know, overall core would be cautiously optimistic about next year. And yeah, all the indicators are that the economy will grow. If the economy grows, then marketing investment grows. They're very much linked. That can only have a positive impact on sponsorship. So I think, yeah, cautiously optimistic. But there are certain categories that will undoubtedly suffer. I mean, you saw Qantas Wallabies in their 30-year partnership now. So the airline industry has been typically a big sponsor across the globe. And in Ireland too, and you know, it'll be interesting to see where they go as a category. I also think alcoholic drinks, I mean, with pubs closed and on-trade being such a huge percentage of their revenue, it'll be interesting to see how many of the long-term partnerships that they can hold on to. Now, all the indications are good so far, but you know, I do think it'll be categories, category dependent, but I think there'll be new categories, you know, healthcare brands, even property brands, they're all becoming newer marketing entities in their own right. And I suppose it'll be interesting to see, there'll be, for all the categories that are dropping, I think there will be new categories come in, but it'll take a while for them to build up. And there are definitely less deals, new deals being done in the market at the moment. But you've seen things like, you know, I think all rights holders have to pivot, absolutely. I think they have to become more commercially aware. I think the fans will have to come on that journey too. You saw Leicester Tigers just sell Welford Road as naming rights recently. I mean, they've been in there since 1892, so long time without a name on it. And but it is a Leicester business, a wealth management business, I believe, who have partnered with Leicester Tigers, and you know, it's being positioned as two Leicester businesses coming together to get through the pandemic. So you know, I think the other key trend you'll see is more purpose being driven through sponsorships. So you saw Imedius given the 20 by 20 logo for more coverage in women's sport. They gave their spot on Lowry's, the golfer's shirt, for example. They gave it over to 20 by 20. That's a kind of purpose-driven example. Kazoo, the new Everton sponsor, said they would donate €1,000 to the Everton Community Fund for every goal Everton scored. I don't think they were quite expecting Everton to have such a good start to the season, though. So I'm sure they'll be hoping for a lot of nil all draws. But you'll see purpose coming through. I think that'll be a big trend. And then, as I mentioned, digital and data. I think there's some super exciting stuff coming down the track too, in terms of, I think, stuff that we can't even quite imagine, but you know, our kids' lives are going to be spent more and more in the virtual world. What does that look like for sport and sponsors? You see, the NBA have just launched a beta test on crypto collectibles. The NBA Top Shot, it's called, is well worth a look to see what's happening there. So you can now own exclusive moments in digital collectibles, and that's all based on non-fungible tokens and the blockchain and stuff that's way beyond my level of understanding. But that is, I mean, that'll blow your mind now where things are going. And then again, they're all opportunities for sponsors to really get on board and understand, what does the new fan look like? Because they're not going to consume content in the same way as we've consumed content all our lives. They're much, you know, the younger generation are much more used to short, snackable content, and how that plays out in a sporting context, you know, in 20 years time, we all have to start to get ready for that now. So yeah, so digital and data, purpose, they're all the key things I see. And then certain categories will obviously start to fall out of sponsorship, and what are the new categories that we can entice in? That would be my focus at the moment for next year.
I might just jump in ahead of Matt for 1 second, purely because Jill mentioned the NBA there and NBA Top Shot, because I always recall my brother had an amazing Italian 90s sticker album book. with Paul McGrath et al. In it, and that has now moved on to trading digital trading cards, essentially. So it is well worth a look, but the NBA is well worth a look. And before you, you know, I throw it to Matt again, Adrian, just in terms of next year, cutting your cloth to measure is a key thing. And whilst the GA is thankfully in a strong position in an Irish sentiment, the NBA and what they have done this year, if you're looking for a global vital sign to house, you know, 16 teams for the playoffs over 100 days and pull it off without a single positive case is amazing. And that's great for the NBA. They did bank $1.5 million as a result of it, but it's probably for every rights holder to try and just see where they can fit into it based on their stature in the local market or the international market.
The NBA are a lesson to us all. They're probably, it's deserving of an episode on its own. Their understanding of audience and fans trends and that kind of thing. Matt, AIBs, are you sharing this? You're leaving our audience there, but that's warm.
I think I'm in a good position here where, like, as a brand, our job is to try and respond to the opportunities that are presented to us by the organizations that we work with and on the good guidance in terms of, like, what's the best decision from a media point of view. I guess as an outsider or as a digital person, to have the opposite view is, I think that there's an interesting thing around sport as an activity that COVID's going to have a massive impact. And Jill talked there about purpose, which I think is going to be really important, is, like, we're talking now about the occasion of sport and watching sport, which I think is obviously critical to the games. But the playing of sport is as critical, if not the foundation of it. And I think something that COVID is going to hit, which we need to be really careful of and observe how we can play a role in it, is how sport is going to be affected post-COVID for young people and for the playing of sport at large. Because it obviously plays a huge... I think the one thing we've all learned in COVID is that everybody has learned the value of exercise and health and well-being. And I think that that's something that I think we'll probably watch very closely over the next while to see, like, from a youth point of view, from a playing point of view, how do we make sure that the next generation play as much sport as we did, if not more? And I think that's probably something I think some sports are handling really well. I think the GAA have always done a fantastic job of it. And I think that's probably something, like, we'll see become a real critical point outside of COVID, is how brands are, as Jill mentioned, from a purpose point of view, making sure that sport is playing a critical role in making people's lives better, which I think is one thing we've definitely learned in the last few months. That's the watching sport makes you feel good. Playing sport makes you feel even better.
Yeah, that's a very good positive note to leave things on. That's episode one of The Ball Game, where we're going to discuss the business of sport. Plenty more to come on that. That's episode one around the challenges and opportunity that exists during a pandemic. And a massive thanks to Jill Downey of Core Sponsorship, Matt Mooney of AIB, and Noel Quinn of the GA. Thanks a million, folks.
The OTB Podcast Network.